You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The government is reintroducing a social investment agency, an organisation that was last seen during Bill English's national government. The agency assesses the cost of individuals to the state, largely the cost of beneficiaries. Once this is assessed, they step in to prevent those deemed most costly from creating these costs to the state. This includes managing individuals' benefits, putting a limit on what they can spend, and sanctioning them if they miss support sessions or meetings. The move is largely created to save the government costs rather than addressing poverty and disadvantage at the root of the cause. Teaching fellow at the University of Auckland, Dr. Eileen Joy, says this approach completely ignores the systemic causes behind disadvantage. I spoke to Joy about the system, how it's implemented, and what impacts it's going to have. For those who don't know, can you explain a little bit about what this fiscal approach to social welfare or this social investment system is?
The social investment model, as developed by the National Party, is about using data to specifically target certain sectors of the population that they believe cost the government and the taxpayer a lot of money. Now, that's based on data that uses what they call an actuarial approach. It's not clear whether they're going to use an actuarial approach this time, but that's certainly what they used under Bill English. So that approach means considering how much a person might cost over a lifetime, and then figuring out, okay, so this person is on the sole parent benefit for this long. That means it's going to cost the taxpayer this amount of money. And if we invested in them early, getting them off that benefit, that would therefore save the government money. So actuarial approaches are typically used in insurance, which means that they are used to calculate how much your premiums should be, so that an insurance company isn't running out of money to cover claims, if that makes sense.
And when they identify an individual that's going to cost the state more in the future, how do they go about investing in them?
That's a really good question. So what they do, what they did last time, is they were only looking at the cost of beneficiaries to the state. So what they decided is that the population that they found that cost the state the most amount of money were teen solo parents. Now, the majority of those parents will be young women, and so they decided that the best way to target this group of people was to manage their money for them. So they put in interventions where these people would have mentors who would put them on restrictive budgets, and it often meant that they had money cards so that they couldn't actually spend money on what they wanted. They had to spend their money in accordance with whatever their money mentor decided. It can also mean that these people are more inclined to receive sanctions on their benefits. For example, if they miss an appointment, if they don't show up for a training, these sorts of things. So the interventions can be anything from, you know, direct money management to sanctions to requirements for example, for parents to go on courses. They can be a range of different things.
In the past, this system was adopted by the previous national government, and now Nicola Willis wants to reintroduce it. Do you think it's going to be reintroduced under a similar vein? Do you think it'll look pretty close to how it did?
It's difficult to tell. She hasn't said an awful lot. She has said that she expects it to be like an investment fund that is run like a traditional investment fund, but I think that's going to take a while to set up. She certainly said that she doesn't think that Bill English's model had much of a chance. He only really instituted the Social Investment Agency just before the election. So, you know, the formal social investment policies didn't really have a chance to stick, even though the ideas of social investment were certainly very influential over their previous term. I guess we're going to have to see what exactly Nicola Willis means by social investment. But given that, you know, in one of the speeches that she gave, she very pointedly referred to Bill English, I would say it's likely that she is going to implement much of what he had originally planned.
And you say that the system ignores systemic causes of disadvantage. How does it do this?
What it does is it looks at, for example, going back to the solo parents, it says solo parents cost the state an awful lot of money. It doesn't look at why those people are solo parents. It doesn't look at what the conditions are that means that they are less likely to have their children be regular attenders at school, why they're less likely to have their children go to the doctor. Now, a common sense approach to that is that actually these people don't have enough money to live on. So poverty is a bit of a structural disadvantage there. So if we were to say, for example, be a bit radical and institute a universal basic income, then that could possibly achieve more than what a targeted approach like social investment would achieve. And that would be a universal social investment rather than one that is pointedly targeting people who, you know, who are really subject to these systemic oppressions. Another example of this is the consideration for Māori. We know that Māori have been systemically oppressed for the last almost couple of hundred years, and yet all that's considered in social investment is that Māori are overrepresented in some pretty negative statistics. So they're considered to be a cost to the state rather than considering the cost to Māori of having the state, you know, strip them of their lands, of their culture, of oppressing their, you know, the reo, of doing all of these things across 200 years. So, you know, it's very clear that the structural realities of poverty and colonisation are ignored. We can see the effects and what they're trying to address through social investment, but actually what they do, they're not considering these. Instead, they're telling people you have to go on a course, or, you know, you have to have your money managed, or you will have sanctions applied to you.
When we look at this system, a lot of it is about saving money for the government, for the state. What do you think the balance that the government is holding over social outcomes for individuals and saving money for the state? What's being considered more highly in this system?
I would say that they're considering the money, the return, what they would call the return on investment. So, and for them, the return on investment will be a reduced length of time on a benefit. So they're not considering, for example, the costs of actually taking somebody off a benefit and applying those sanctions. What are the costs to that whānau? What are the costs to the children of being further entrenched in poverty? So they're only measuring the outcomes that they can actually measure using numbers. So and those are only very limited as well. So they're only measuring the economic cost. They're not measuring things that are, they're a lot harder, I admit, they're a lot harder to measure, but things like social cohesion, you know, things like our internal sense of well-being, how positive we feel about society, and those are all really good things. And if we reduce the impact of poverty and we start to address the ongoing effects of colonisation, then actually those costs, the things that the government considers to be costs, will be reduced over time. It's just a broader, more systemic way of considering what these negative outcomes are and how we can address them. I think it's really sad that we look at a whole section of our population and just see them as economic units and what they can produce, rather than considering, you know, our citizens as full and rounded human beings.
That was Teaching Fellow at the University of Auckland, Dr. Eileen Joy, on the government's fiscal approach to social welfare, ignoring the systemic causes.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.